Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Well, we reflected on the weekend's football, painful though it was. We're also joined by Jay Bothroyd to compound it for me, a big Arsenal fan. But it was very interesting. He, as you'll discover, he got to know Ange Postecoglou in Japan quite well. So Jay had a chat with us. Arm wrestling is getting very popular in the UK. We found out why. There's lots of clubs springing up everywhere. And we spoke to a distance runner who did a very, very odd course over the weekend. So I think that should keep you busy. Here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. And with so many errors being made every week, I've decided that Howard Webb should start sending out apology gifts like macarons.
Like a fruit basket.
Gary O'Neill could open his own shop.
I think he probably could, He'd have the local Greggs out of business in 5 minutes, wouldn't he?
It's just, honestly, I mean, my son sent me a text. I know he was upset because of the end of the game, but he said to me, I've had it with football. You know, it's not just VAR. It's actually the laws. The laws need to be looked at, need to be changed. Offside has got to go to clear daylight. Otherwise, there's no point. You don't need to go to Dutch Division 3 to try it. Honestly,
they
just
always
do it.
Get a poor old Dutch Division
3.
It'll
be a much better game. Everybody will understand what offside is. I mean, the one yesterday with Van der Ven, we'll talk about it with Danny. It was ridiculous. Absolutely ludicrous. But there you go. What are you going to do?
But, you know, as you say, as the laws stand, as the way they conduct VAR.
But they need to change.
I don't sense from what those in the know say that it's going to get a whole... It's like the idea that, oh, we've got semi-automated offsides next year, everything will be fine.
But what's the point of this sort of thing like a toe or a shoulder blade? Or people are sick of it. Nobody wants it.
No.
Absolutely pointless. It's annoying, and I can't believe that they won't look at it and do something about it. Even Arsene Wenger thinks it should be that, doesn't he?
He does.
He has
and he's a man of influence,
Exactly. See,
the trouble is, the people at the top of the world of refereeing have just got absolutely massive egos. It's not a surprise. I'm talking at the very top at IFAB.
I'll give you an example that it doesn't just go to the very top. Assistant referee Scott Ledger yesterday was wearing a pair of boots with Ledge on it. Do you remember Foy Boy?
Foy Boy, yes. Never a good look there.
Ledge.
Is it? Yeah.
Honestly, what is wrong with these people? You must know that's going to get picked up.
Yeah.
The ego.
So, I think if you're the people who've laid down the laws of the world of football, you've got to admit that you've probably got something wrong and your laws need tweaking. I think it takes a lot to do that. When you're,
omniscient. You double down, don't you?
The way they are. Yeah, in the end, you think, okay, yeah, we'll tweak it, but we'll tweak it in my way and we'll make it better. But not necessarily the case, as we've seen with a handball law, which has tied them all in knots.
I was looking at Rodri yesterday.
Were you really?
I decided I'd like a pair of his shorts.
Would you?
I'm constructing a mini yacht to sail to work along the
Trip. He does like a massive
pair of shorts.
Yeah, he does like a loose short. They all have the little foibles, the players. Do you think he wears it a size up? Do you think he does? He has them specially made.
I think he does.
Yeah.
Any apple-loving England fans could be shocked to the core, the Sun say, Euro 2024. The German hosts are banning fruit to boost sales of their sausages, so you can't take apples in.
That's such a spurious story. I saw that the other day. It's pretty clear what's gone on. If you take an apple into a football stadium, you can use it as a weapon, can't you? You can throw it at someone.
Yeah.
I mean, to paraphrase Dutch Holland for long-term listeners. But I mean, if you buy a bratwurst in the stadium, every 10 yards or somewhere buy a sausage in Germany, isn't there?
You could throw a bratwurst, but it wouldn't be much point.
I mean, it's not going to... I mean, unless you've got a very good arm and it's a very hard bratwurst, you're going to... I mean, you wouldn't like to be hit with a sausage, would you, as you're running down the wing? But it's probably not going to do the... won't let you take a pineapple into the match either,
will they? No, pineapple probably not. The only apples most England fans like, they come in the form of cider, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's crushed, heavily pressed. Yeah, pressed, exactly that. So a couple of things to get you going on today that our next guest, Perry... Yeah, thanks, producer. Perry Groves, Perry was there yesterday. But as he was going in, I heard him on air and he was just getting into the stadium and Alex Crook said, did you manage to get without being spotted? Because I always look out for Perry. I'm up on the floor where the media guys go and take their position. And I'm always looking out for him. So I can say, oh, look, everybody, there's Perry Groves, the former Arsenal winger, well-known Tottenham hater. But I've never spotted him.
Oh, that's a shame.
But he was going in and he got what he had, his hat down, you know, he's got a collar up, he's walking in.
What we call a Steve McFadden.
Yeah, no one spotted him. And Steve Sedgley, the former Spurs and Cov midfielder, saw him and he went, all right, Perry. Hey. Just as he was getting, it was like the Great Escape.
Grovesy.
Grovesy. Like the Great Escape. So anyway, outed by the enemy. Have you had one of those? You've thought, I'm going to get in. You've gone to the away game and you thought, no one's spotted who I support. I'm absolutely fine. Only to be outed Great Escape style at the very end. Do let us know. Talksport.com. Text 81089. Tweet TSHNJ. And the other one was old sporting rivalries. And this is in the world of snooker. We may be discussing this a little bit more later on. And this goes back to Maguire and Murphy. Stephen Maguire and Sean Murphy. Stephen Maguire knocked him out. But they've had a bit of a ding-dong, which goes back to 2004. They played in the snooker Grand Prix in 2004. And it was alleged, they said, Maguire was Dr. Frame after forgetting his chalk and delaying the start of their 2004 Grand Prix match. It's alleged that Murphy had asked the ref to intervene and apply the rules, which he denies because the Glaswegian was not ready to play on time. So ever since then, they've had a bit of a ding-dong.
What's the point? It goes on for so long, you can't even remember what the original thing was about.
20 years this has been going on.
That's
for.
Mad.
So I was just wondering, is there someone you play football against at another club, maybe tennis from another tennis club, it could be snooker, but have you got a kind of is there somebody you just don't get on with, you've got a bit of a sporting feud?
Don't name them.
No, we're quite interested to know how it all started, even if you say there was a bloke at the other tennis club, but how it all started, what kicked it off and how long this has been in place, and are you a little bit embarrassed by the whole thing?
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
But we just received a tweet or an email, I think, whatever, from someone that has basically done a kind of sitcom. I don't know how he's done it. Listen to this. I asked you about nemesis, if you've had one from a sporting context, because the Maguire-Murphy game in the World Snooker Championship, they've got a bit of previous from 2004 where they fell over out of, I think it was Murphy forgetting his chalk. We're delaying the start of the game. So for 20 years, they've been stewing on it. Most of the ones we've had have been like footballing ones and some good ones. But listen to this, Andy, you'll like this. I worked in a pub and we had an 80-year-old nemesis that used to come in to the open mic and wet himself without fail.
Oh, no.
He bought a budgie in one night, an old PG tips box to give to a barmaid. It got out and it took us 3 hours to catch it. We barred him in the end and he told me he could kill me with one finger.
A
character. I mean, if you pitch that at Hollywood, there'd be people queuing up to play the part of that old boy.
Probably, yeah.
So you didn't put your name on it. That's sensational. Thank you for sending that. It's got nothing to do with sport, of course. So, Andy, anything else you want to share with the class?
Well, that story we just heard in the news about 13 of the 23 Chinese swimmers who tested positive for a banned substance will be able to take part in the Olympic Games this year.
That is very much the Olympic ideal, isn't it?
Yeah,
really?
Who needs the enhanced games?
Yes.
Why bother?
We have actually got it already, haven't we? That is very true.
Not good, is it, really? What else have we got? Oh, yeah, I did like this star text. He's not happy with... He calls Eric Ten Hag Eric Tenth Place.
Oh.
Which I think is
Eric
a bit...
Eric Tenth Place. Okay, that's harsh, quite clever. Isn't
it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so... but he's not happy.
Did you see the banner by the Luton fans at Molineux, Andy? Said, Stuart Atwell, he's one of our own. well done, whoever paid for that one. That was very cleverly
Never
done.
Mind Stuart Atwell, the woman who refereed... Chelsea Barcelona women's game. She must be a season ticket holder at the new camp.
I think, yeah. That was a. Yeah, we're going to talk about that. I mean, I think MAs is going to get a phone call from UEFA, but not that it'll bother if you're going to America in a couple of months. But yeah, they did get slightly sawn off, your girls, didn't they, in that game? It wasn't a great decision.
Completely. Locals in the village, which inspired Radio 4's The Archers, claim that a football club's expansion, this is Inkborough FC, will rob them of their peace and quiet. Honestly, it's like an everyday story of NIMBYs, isn't it? For goodness sake.
Cut to Andy moving into the area. Yeah, we brought you news last week of Joachim Andersen's coffee group. Of course, the Palace defender.
He wants to be in it, the manager, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah. Oliver Glasner, you saw on the train the other week, Andy. He's a bit put out that he's not been invited into the coffee appreciation society WhatsApp group of all the... trying to think of Palace players of the past who would have had a coffee appreciation WhatsApp group. I don't know. Pards? I wonder what he's made.
Maybe.
What he's made of all that at the moment. But yeah, that sounds quite interesting. But anyway, the manager wants in. He wants to be... He said, now I drink Earl Grey tea. There we are.
There you go. Sean Spillane wrote to The Sun today.
He said, not Mickey's boy.
It might be.
Yep.
Liverpool will end the season missing out on a chance to equal Manchester United's coveted 20 top-flight leagues when Jurgen Klopp leaves. Let's hope finals head coach Arne Slot takes over and leads the quest for success. I don't hope that at all.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I suppose it was a bit of a sweeping statement from Mickey's boy.
I do love these headline explains in the tabloids. So this is a good headline today. It's a really good one. You don't need to explain it at all. This is about Dolly Parton as... got her own wine range.
Oh, yeah.
And the headline was Wine to Five.
Oh, yes, good, isn't it?
That's good, isn't it? Yeah. Dolly, famed for her songs, 9 to 5. Yes, we know. God's sake.
This is the man who shouts at the newspaper. Honestly, it's just the way he shouts at his own newspaper. Just
Have you seen that thing, Scoop?
I have seen it.
It's good, isn't it? Emily Maitlis.
Yes,
well, they're bringing out another one.
Yes, I know that. I was aware of this, Andy.
It's exactly the same story.
But with different actors.
What's the point? It's like making the rival series of The Crown and calling it The Monarchy.
Yeah. I won't. We'd all watch it.
Roxy and Jacob's Daily Podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Runner Ed Owen had a beautiful picturesque run with the hardest geezer. Helped him out on the final leg of his world record attempt. But probably not quite as good a view, I think, in the run that he did over the weekend. And that was running 441 times around his apartment in Manchester. Good afternoon, Ed.
Hi, fellas. How you doing?
Yeah. So...
the view probably not quite as good as you experience in Africa.
No, not at all. Nah. It was a little bit different, I got to say, yeah.
What? Where did you get the idea from to do this?
It's a good question. I wanted to do something that pushed myself and challenged myself. And I wanted to do something a bit stupid. And I just had the idea to run around the apartment block. I mean, wasn't very far from home. If I ever got in any trouble, I could just nip into my flat. If I needed the toilet, I could just nip into my flat. So it was actually pretty convenient in the end.
How far was it exactly, each lap?
290 metres we measured on like MapMyRun and Strava and stuff.
And so overall you did, well, it's a bit of, we're not quite sure because some people say it was 79 miles, but your watch said it was 86.
Yeah, so I measured it on Strava on my phone and on my watch. On Strava it said 138 kilometres. I don't know what that is in miles. I work in kilometres. And on my watch it said 120. And then we did the maths, 441 times 290 gave us about 127K. So landed on that in the end.
Did you, in the middle. Was you went alone? Did you get a bit of, you have a bit of company?
Yeah, so I actually only ran on my own for about half an hour of the 12 hours. So a load of guys from And Coach Run Club, which is my local run club, came and ran with me. One lad ran for 5.5 hours, to be fair to him, did about 60K.
Where did they, did you alert them to it? Or did they, did somebody just saw you running around the block and it was like Forrest Gump, people just started joining in?
Nah, I told everyone before, I told everyone I was going to do it. I told the bakery, which I named it after, I told them as well, so they knew. Yeah, and so then they got behind it and just came and supported me.
What's the bakery you named it after then? What was that about? Is that something you've, a sort of friend's business or something?
No, it's just a bakery on the corner of the block.
Ah.
And so I figured I was going to be passing it every minute and a half. I thought I'd let them know. And then as a twist, I actually only ate food from the bakery during the whole 4 hours. So they gave me some free food as well. It's Compagno Bakery in Ancoats. I should shout them out.
Pop home for comfort breaks?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anytime I needed the loo, I just popped into my flat.
You can do that, isn't it? So, but there was a good reason behind it, wasn't it? You were raising money for charity.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was doing it for Alzheimer's Society. I've raised a lot more than what my original target was. So it's amazing. A lot of people have got behind it, which I didn't really expect. It was all a bit of fun for me, but obviously I wanted to do a good thing with it as well, which is why I did it for Alzheimer's.
And where can people go to support you if it's still active, your link?
Yeah, the link is still live. So it's on Instagram. It's miles, M-I-L-E-S dot ahead, A-H-E-D-D.
Brilliant. Good to talk to you, Ed. Well done.
Cheers, fellas. Thank you.
Ed Owen there running around his apartment block 441 times.
Some achievement there, really.
Over 12 hours.
Yeah.
So, as promised, Britain's fastest growing sport, certainly among them, arm wrestling. Arm wrestling clubs are popping up all over the country. That's a very... The Birmingham Bullets, we pull one out of the air, has been a very popular club. So I'm sure this is music to the ears of our next guest, a seasoned arm wrestler, I believe a former world champion, part of the British Arm Wrestling Federation. Neil Pickup joins us. Good afternoon, Neil.
Hello there, mate. How are you doing?
We're good.
You're good, yeah.
This is great. Is it a sport you've loved and done all your life, suddenly getting sort of column inches in the newspapers, and here we are on TalkSport saying it's growing in popularity?
It is. Arm wrestling has had a real resurgence of late. Probably the last 18 to 24 months specifically has been exceptional for the game. Getting a lot of eyeballs, a lot of people paying real attention to the sport, and that's fantastic.
Well, why would that be?
Exactly, yeah.
I think, to be honest, a lot of it has come from an enormous injection of interest from major social media entities and bodies. You've got people like Larry Wheels, who was a very, very big fitness influencer, got involved in the sport and went viral in a couple of areas. We have a couple of individuals that have come into the sport which have helped dramatically as well. One in particular, over and above all others, I would say is probably Devon Larratt of Canada, who I think in any sport, if you've got someone who is truly interesting, a real point of interest, it massively helps. And if you look at Devon Larratt, just looking at the stats of the man, he is a truly remarkable character. You're talking about a 6'6", former special forces soldier, who just happens to be one of the best super heavyweight arm wrestlers in the world. The guy's quite an unusual individual as well. He's quite a spiritual individual, really endearing figure, very open, very accessible, brave. And that kind of thing, this has just created a perfect storm of opportunity and the interest, as you said, going through the roof at the moment, and fantastic times for the sport.
Does the length of your arm make any difference? I mean, he's particularly tall, 6'7". Does it make, if you're 5'3", is it harder?
Leverage is very important. I mean, I actually gave Devon Larratt his nickname, which is No Limits.
Right.
And that nickname came from effectively Archimedes' law. If you give me a lever long enough and a fulcrum strong enough, I will move the world. And Devon has actually been doing that since that point forward. So yes, leverage does matter. If you've got an unusual combination with Devon and some athletes like that, where they've got a very, very long lever in the forearm, but also tremendous joint integrity. The joint strength is critical. With all strength sports, a lot of it is around material. Some people are just stronger than others. I mean, a very good personal friend of mine is a guy called Eddie Hall.
Mm.
Eddie is a former world's strongest man.
He's a strong man.
Yeah, he's been in the CS, Eddie. Yeah. I don't think I want to take him on up.
No, definitely not.
Now, if you look at Eddie in his early career, he was always uniquely gifted in strength. I myself, similar situation. As a young boy, it was very evident that I was very strong. And so you end up gravitating towards fields and disciplines which suit you, and that was very much why I got into the sport of armoursmithing.
Is there a kind of central place where people can go if they're interested in joining one of the sort of clubs or finding out more about it? Is there a bit of information online?
Sure, there is. I mean, one of the best ways of doing that actually is an app which was created in association with Devon Larratt himself. It's called Armbet. And if you just go on and look up Armbet, the app, you will find that. And it allows you to stay in touch with, locate arm wrestlers around the world. So this thing is like a travel buddy for people who want to arm wrestle. Whichever country you go to, if you download the Armbet app, tell them where you are, groups of arm wrestlers who are training at various clubs, various associations within that area, regardless of country, you can get in touch with them, and that's a great way to go about it.
And Neil, when people say, what do you do? I say, I'm a world champion arm wrestler. Do they always say, go on then? And then the arm gets planted, the hand gets open. Do they always want to try their luck?
Sometimes that does happen, yeah. That does happen. They usually rethink their life choices a couple of seconds later.
Yeah, absolutely.
I saw an old picture of you arm wrestling Arnold Schwarzenegger back in the day. Yeah. You probably had a few celebrity arm wrestles over the years, have you?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I mean, it's very accessible. It's something I suppose everybody's tried at some point in their life.
Yeah.
And so it's very appealing in that respect. And people, I usually find, are really engaged in how you do it. So people would say, is it just about strength?
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's like saying boxing's just about hitting people. Very much the opposite. There's a tremendous amount of nuance, of strategy, as you alluded to a moment ago, with leverage and so on. And it's usually find the best arm wrestlers are very strategic in their approach to the sport. So they develop their style around the nuance of their physical characteristics.
Good stuff. Good to talk to you, Neil. Appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Likewise, guys. Thank you very much indeed. Cheers.
Neil Pickup there, former world champion arm wrestler, part of the British Arm Wrestling Federation. Mm. I suppose the logical thing would be for me and you to arm wrestle now, Andy,
but
that would be highly embarrassing. I'm a bit of a weakling, really.
No,
I mean, I wouldn't
be
much.
Me, obviously. Yeah.
Okay. We arm wrestle Georgia, our assistant producer. That would be good.
That's more my mark.
Yeah. It'd be great if she beat you, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That would be good. Got to give the air, would be fantastic.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
But joining us now is former Arsenal Cov, a much travelled, and something we'll come on to, footballer who found himself in a studio yesterday in the Tottenham Arsenal role with our own Jamie O'Hara. Jay Botheroy joins us. Hi, Jay.
How you doing, mate? You all right?
Yeah, you enjoyed
Jamie's suffering.
Oh, you gave Jamie some clog, didn't you, really? It was a tough watch for me.
Sure, it was a tough watch for you. Do you know what? I got a bit nervous at the end, to be honest, after all the banter I was giving him, but we came through in the end.
You could feel that in the stadium. I was there sort of right opposite the Arsenal fans, and we were getting it both barrels at half time. And, you know, it was interesting, Perry Groves, and he never felt completely confident, even at 3-0 at half time. But as soon as that first goal went in, I think you could sense the nerves of the Arsenal fans.
To be honest, when I did actually say, and he thought I was joking, I did actually say 4-1. And he said to me, oh, that's rubbish. You were just joking. And I said, no, I actually do think that. And I think it'll be 2-0 within 30 minutes. And then obviously that happened as well. And to be honest, if I'm honest, Tottenham played good football. They knocked the ball around. But it was the cutting edge they didn't have. And when I looked at Arsenal's performance, it was more disciplined, compact, aggressive. And then the details, which is the set pieces, Arsenal have been fantastic at this season. And then obviously until Raya, I don't know what he was doing, but he, you know, it seemed to me, I look at that and say he was trying to take liberties. But when that happened, you let Tottenham back in the door. And, you know, then it's nervy now.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately it's what Arsenal have been doing all season, grinding out results.
It's a different game if Van de Ven isn't offside. Completely. Spurs were so on top. The momentum was with them. The stadium would have gone mad. 1-1, it would have been a tough game for Arsenal then. Not saying they wouldn't have won it, but it would have been much, much tougher.
Yeah, definitely. I think it would have been tougher, but I mean, he was offside. I think the one that I would say, you know, could have gone either way and it went our way was the clip on Kulusevski. If that was me then, I would want a penalty there because ultimately he's running and even though it's a soft clip can still trip you up.
Mm.
You know, sometimes, you know, when you was a kid back in the day and you just like clip your mate's heels and make him trip, like that's what can happen. You know, you can fall down. The thing is, he didn't go down. I think had he have gone down, you know, he would have got a penalty. But, you know, we say to players, we want you to stay on your feet and don't dive and don't make theatrics. But he did do that and he wasn't rewarded for it.
I mean, he felt maybe that he could still stay on his feet and get a shot off or get a pass in. Yeah, and he felt he was, because he'd not completely been wiped out. But, you know, as I said, players sometimes are too honest. When you were playing in Japan, Jake, did you come up against a Postecoglou side? Have you played? Did you play against? Was it Marinos, his team?
Marinos, I played against Ange a few times. I used to actually meet up with him in Tokyo and have lunch with him sometimes and have a coffee when I could. I really think he's a great manager. I think I don't want to admit this, but I think he can take Tottenham places and win some trophies. It's his first season. There's going to be mistakes, but I think from where Tottenham as a football club have come, you know, I think now they're in a much better place. I think the fans are happier with the brand of football, as in it's not defensive no more. It's not boring. You know, there's going to be goals in the game. You can expect goals. So I think Tottenham have a good manager in Ange, and I think that he will at some point, you know, get some silverware, which you guys really, really need.
I mean, you've spoken to him about his philosophy and you've seen the kind of football they play, and he clearly at the moment hasn't completely got all the personnel. It was the same with Arteta early on, wasn't it? He decided he had this core of five or six players that he had to work with, and then he
it
built
takes
around
time.
Them.
It does
take time.
He's done a good job.
I think there was a few seasons where I think Arteta finished eighth. I'm not 100% sure, but I think two seasons
twice,
where
So
I mean, listen, you have to start somewhere. There's players that obviously he doesn't want. Sometimes, you know, there's players in a squad that doesn't fit what he wants. And he's starting to build now. He's going to rebuild that squad. But he does have an eye for a good player. The thing I like about football, for me, I'm a football purist. I want to see a philosophy. I want to see managers, you know, adopting a style, bringing those young players up through the system. So when they step into the first team, they look comfortable. You can see that with Man City. That's why they're so good. You know, whoever steps in on that pitch, they understand exactly what's expected of them. And that is what I mean by a philosophy. Ange does that. He's done that at Marinos before. He done it at Celtic. And now he's at Tottenham, the beginning of his tenure. And I'm sure he'll do it there too.
As a football purist, did you enjoy Arsenal's performance at the Etihad?
Got the job done, though, didn't he?
I mean, listen, I'm going to be objective today and tell the truth. Because if I'm honest, I look at Arsenal and I think Arsenal against Man City, I think that's a really good matchup for Arsenal. As in, Arsenal have got players that can expose Man City in them wide areas. And with the defence and with the likes of Declan Rice, Partey, Jorginho, they can stay really disciplined, really compact and break fast. And I think, yes, last season, Man City beat Arsenal. But I think if the tactics are right, Arsenal have the tools to give Man City problems. I was a little bit disappointed that Arsenal went there just for a point. That was clear to see. I would have liked them to do something similar to what Liverpool did the week before. Go and win the game. If you get a draw, you come away with a draw. Great. You know, don't lose a game. But I want to see my club believe in themselves and go and win that game. So if I'm honest, I was a bit disappointed they went and played like that.
Yeah. You'd like Masai Eze, I see. I'm sure a lot of clubs would like him, but you think he'd be a very good fit?
He's a lovely player.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, I think he's a great player. He had one of the worst injuries in football with his Achilles rupture, and it took him a while, but now you can really see how good he is. Technically, he's a fantastic player. He shoots really well. He's a big guy. He's strong. I think he's exactly what Arsenal
needs. Where would he fit in, though, there? Who would he play?
In the three in midfield. I still look at Arsenal. Arsenal need a striker. I'd love them to just say, now we are one of the biggest clubs in the world. Let's go and sign Isak for 120 mil. Break the bank for him. Because Arsenal need a striker. I think they need another midfielder on that kind of left side. And then I would say a left back as well. Mm. But I think the way that Arsenal are going, I think it's just a bit unfortunate for Arsenal at the moment. We're in a time in the Premier League where you're playing against one of the best sides ever in Premier League history in Man City. And there's no shame in finishing second. But of course, me being, you know, an Arsenal fan, obviously I want to see Arsenal win the title. It's been too long now.
With these new rules that look like they're going to come in, this anchoring, I don't think any Premier League teams will be able to spend 120 million.
Yeah, it's going to get a whole lot tougher.
I think it's going to, I'm not sure this is a very good idea by the Premier League.
We'll see. We wanted to talk to you about something else you're involved with, the Prostate Cancer UK, their big golf race. You've had sort of personal family experience of this, haven't you, Jay?
Yeah, I mean, it just happened to me very recent. It was very shocking to myself and my family. I found out that my dad had prostate cancer. At the time, you know, when he first told me, of course, it was over the phone, and I didn't quite know how to take it, to be honest. But then when I went to see him and see him standing in front of me, I could see vulnerability in his face. And I haven't seen that before from my dad. I've never even seen him cry before. So, you know, he was always my rock. He was always there for me, my good and my bad times. And now it's like the tables have turned. And I'm that person there now that's there to support him, that's there to be there for him and be strong for him. So it was a really tough time. He has come out the other end, but it's one of those situations, I don't know about you guys, but for my parents, it was much like, if I don't feel pain, I'm not going to go to the doctors.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are like that. I think in this day and age, we need to stay on top of our health. We need to get checked out, you know, at least, you know, once a year. But I think it's important to know that 1 in 8 men actually have prostate cancer. 1 in 4 black men have prostate cancer. So it's important that us as men, you know, we keep on top of that, keep on top of our health, get ourselves checked out regularly, because you never know when it could just flare up.
And this fundraising challenge, the big golf race, how's that going to work?
So basically, we're raising money. We're going to go on golf courses, play as much holes as possible. To be honest, I've only played 36 in my life, so I'm gonna attempt 72, and at some point I'm gonna attempt 100 as well.
Wow.
It's something I love doing now. I've been retired from football. Actually, I was talking to Jamie about it yesterday. He plays golf all the time, so I'm gonna have to give him a shout and get him on this as well. But yeah, ultimately we're raising money and we're trying to create more awareness, we're trying to make more money so we can, do extensive research in as to why, you know, even 1 in 4 black men have it like half as much as white men. That I still don't understand that. And that's what, you know, some money will be going to, I'm sure. But I think the research in itself needs to be more extensive.
If you put the big golf race 2024, the big golf race into Google, you'll click through to prostatecanceruk.org and all the details are there of how you can get involved. Before we let you go, you were talking about City being brilliant. You played from recently against AFC Richmond, didn't you, in Ted Lasso? I saw the players coming out. The tunnel, and I don't normally look at the opposition. I thought, that's Jay Boothroyd. He's playing for Man City. That must have been fun.
Yeah, it was. Do you know what the funny thing was? Obviously, when COVID happened, you know, I was in Japan, so I was just binge watching TV, and then I came across Ted Lasso on Apple TV, and I was just like, "What's all this about?" And then I got watching it, and actually, I loved the show. And then my management called me up and said, "Listen, it's going to be the last ever Ted Lasso. Do you want to be a part of it?" And I was like, "Go on, then. Yeah, why not?" And then it turns out I was playing for Man City. Pep's giving me a little pep talk. So it was good to be a part of it. It was nice to see actually how it was made, how it's made, and how you see it on TV is like crazy. Worlds apart, it's crazy. But it was a good experience, and you know, I'm on IMDb now, isn't it?
Was Pep taking it very seriously? Did he have? Was he telling you off when you came?
I'm taking
off the
my skills to Hollywood.
Yeah,
Pep was good in it too. He was excellent.
Yeah, he was good. Mm. Well, look, Jake, good to talk to you. We wish you well with the big golf race, and we'll catch up with you again soon. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Well, there we are. That was this afternoon's show. Maybe you could have a little run round your flat for about 12 hours, Andy. How would that pan out? That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Great.
Nice idea. You'd end up in the Thames if you weren't careful, you tripped. So there we are. I'm here with Charlie tomorrow. Rupert Bell's going to be joining. He's playing Troon. He's playing the course tomorrow.
Oh, man,
hacking his way around about 150, I'm sure. That's where the Open's going to be this year. So we'll catch up with Rupert tomorrow, amongst other things, and build up to the Champions League. Do hope you can join us. From one, if not the podcast, will be available as always at four. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's armodillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo, built to last, designed to impress.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.